Coming up on episode 230 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the 2022 Nissan Pathfinder, the Honda Civic Sport, and the new Civic Type R, the North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year awards for 2022. The past was garbage. Bollinger cancels the pickup and SUV, all that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 230 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam McWall Sandwich from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from Auto Vitale.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Engadget.
All right. Well, since Robbie apparently didn't drive anything this week, and Nicole was still scrambling to figure out how much her car cost, I will go first.
Wait, let's be clear. I'm scrambling to figure out because I pulled the Monroney out of the glove box, sat down, and I'm like, that's not the car this goes to. So they have the wrong information in the car. So I'm trying to build it to find out exactly how much it cost. So
I didn't say it was your fault while you were scrambling.
I'm just clarifying.
Here's an 87 Chrysler LeBaron Monroney. You're like, what?
I'm like, this is not a Chrysler LeBaron. I'm pretty sure this is the wrong Monroney.
What do we got sitting here? Oh, this will work. It's close. This will
work. Throw that in there. She'll be fine.
It's got four wheels. It's got numbers.
She'll be good. She'll wing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I had the 2022 Nissan Pathfinder Platinum four-wheel drive in Scarlet Ember Tint Coat, which is a great color. The Pathfinder is Nissan's three-row crossover. It got a complete redesign last year, and it shares its platform with the Infiniti QX60, which we've talked about previously as well. The previous generation Pathfinder was, how shall we put this? The
Something.
Design was dull.
It was kind of a car.
Yeah.
Of some sorts.
It was inoffensive to the point of being almost invisible. The new one is much more interesting to look at. You know, I think it's adopted, Nissan's latest design language, like what we see on the Rogue. You know, it's got crisper lines. It's a little more squared off than before. Bolder grill as you would expect, since it is in fact 2022. So you got to have more grill, but not excessively too much grill. So this one, they went back that when the Pathfinder first launched back in the 80s. You know, it was a body on frame, true SUV. It was not, a front-wheel drive, unibody, crossover type of vehicle like it is today. But, there's still some love out there in the community for those original Pathfinders. And so they incorporated a few design cues from that one. You can see in the C-pillars, those original Pathfinders had the triangular window between the B and the C-pillar the forward-leaning C-pillar there. They had in the front of the hood, they had three slots, which was never quite clear what they were for. I guess it needed extra cooling that you couldn't get through the grill, which wasn't large enough then. but they've sort of incorporated that into the grill of the new one. So it looks a little more SUV-like than before. It's a sharp-looking vehicle. It's fine. The interior is way improved over the old one, as we've seen with other recent Nissans. Particularly in this platinum trim level. It's got nice leather seating surfaces, soft touch materials. One of my long-running big complaints with Nissans over the last 7, 8, 9 years was really terrible infotainment displays. They were dim, they had suffered from a lot of glare. Now it's a much brighter, better, easier to use display. It's more responsive. It's still got the same basic interface. So if you've driven a Nissan in the last 6 or 7 years, you'll be quite familiar with this one. It does have support for wireless CarPlay, Apple CarPlay, but not for wireless Android Auto. So if you're using an Android phone, you do have to plug it in. But it does come with both USB-A, the old rectangular, and the USB-C ports, both in the first and second rows. And one of the really nice features of both the Pathfinder and the QX60 is the second row seats are designed to make it easier to get into the third row. So they flip forward from the front edge of the seat. So it slides forward and hinges forward. You don't have to fold the second row seat backs down to get that seat forward so you can get into the back. The whole thing just tilts forward. So if you are using child seats or booster seats or anything like that, infant seats, you can leave those in place and still tilt the seat forward, which I think is a really handy feature if you're going to use that third row. And even if you're not, it still makes it easier to get into the third row. There's the version that I have has the second row captain's chairs with a little console in between the second row seats, which is removable. So you can also have, if you don't want to use that console, you can have a pass-through to get to the third row in between the seats, another handy feature. As with many recent Nissans, this is still powered by an updated version of the classic VQ V6, 3.5 liters, 284 horsepower, and 259 pounds-feet of torque. It's still a great engine. For this one, they ditched the CVT and went to a 9-speed automatic transmission, which is also on the Infiniti. So it's a great great transmission, very smooth shifting, good responsiveness from the transmission, and just general acceleration from the vehicle. It's got Nissan's intelligent four-wheel drive, it's an all-wheel drive system that can do some locking and torque vectoring front to rear. 20-inch alloys on the platinum trim level. Fuel economy is okay. It's not great. The EPA fuel economy rating is 20 city, 25 highway, 22 combined. I've been averaging about 19. It has been, a particularly cold week here. So that does tend to bring fuel economy down. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the Q&A. There's a question that relates to that with EVs. But, I did a fairly lengthy highway trip the other day to go visit someone. And, it was still only getting about 19 miles per gallon, even on the highway. So not that impressive on the fuel economy. But otherwise, it's generally a really nice three-row crossover. All in, the one I'm driving, $51,790, including an $1,175 destination charge. So Nissan is at least keeping it not too insane with the destination charges, not like some other automakers.
They've broken the $1,000 barrier.
Yeah, I was actually, the destination charge is funny. I have to look that up for one site specifically and pull that out for every single story, right? And what's amazing is every single one is going up like $200, $300. I've had some go up as much as $400 for the same car last year over this year with nothing, just same car, same everything, $400.
Going from the same factory to the same destination.
Exactly. Nothing has changed. The model is still the same. The factory is still the same. The destination is still the same. $400 extra to get it. Yeah.
Everything's the same, except for now you're paying more money for.
So have you guys driven the Pathfinder?
I did. I drove it when they did the launch a while back for this new one, and they even let us take it off road a little bit, which is kind of fun because it's not really an off road vehicle. I mean, like you can, but you're not gonna Wrangler Rubicon the thing. Like it's not that kind of off-roader. But you know what? Still, like it was perfectly capable of the average, I'm driving on the dirt road to ye olde cabin for a weekend. But they did have us going over a little bit of sketchy dirt, it was a little bit loose, you had a little tight turn, you had some little uneven rocks that you had to pay attention to what you were doing, and it came up a little thing. Sort of impressed. I didn't think it would they took us over terrain that was a little bit more aggressive than I probably would have ever taken the Pathfinder over, and it was totes fine. Like, the whole crew, all of us made it through with no problems, so that was kind of cool. I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought the improvements that they made little improvements everywhere. I didn't feel like there was any giant leap forward, like, oh my gosh, this is miles better than the old one, but it's like, little better, little better, little better, little better, which is kind of what you want. Like, all told, I thought it was a better vehicle than it was before.
Yeah, I drove it a few weeks ago, months ago. I don't know. Time doesn't make any sense anymore. It feels much better. Well, it feels better than the previous version. And yeah, it's not really an off-road. Like you said, you go up to the cabin, you know, it snows, you're fine. You're fine. You want to go up to, you want to go up to mountains, do some snowboarding. Yeah, this is going to be fine. Like you said, you're not doing the Rubicon Trail or anything like that. It's a nicer car inside and out. And talk about the old Nissan Path. I remember when the old one came out, I was in high school, and that was one of those cars that you were just like, oh, you lusted over. yeah. At least in my town.
It was a pretty cool because it had that first generation.
And it had that they had the hidden rear door handle, which was always crazy because of the chicken tax, I think. There was this crazy tariff on two-door SUVs in the United States for imports. So,
really?
Have you ever seen like a two-door SUV from anybody that's not an American automaker in the United States?
No.
Not
for a long time anyway.
Yeah, I think they finally phased out the chicken tax.
What I'm questioning is, why is it called the chicken tax?
It goes back to the 1960s. There was a little bit of a trade tiff between the U.S. and Europe, and it was they were the Europeans imposed a tariff on U.S. chicken, and so in retaliation, the U.S. imposed tariffs, a 25% tariff on imported light trucks.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was unaware of this little chicken tiff that we had with Europe.
It ultimately, I don't think it had a huge impact on Europe because they weren't building a whole lot of light trucks. I mean, it was mostly vans and things like that. The Japanese were much more impacted by it, which is why, one of the first vehicles that Nissan started building in the U.S. when they started building vehicles here was the pickup trucks, the compact pickups.
The hard body,
and then the Frontier. That's why, Toyota builds the Tacomas, because the chicken tax actually is still in effect. And one of the particularly weird anomalies caused by the chicken tax was when Ford started bringing in the Transit Connect back 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The tariff only applies to what they classified as commercial vehicles. So pickups, SUVs, but not to straight up passenger vehicles. So what Ford did when at the time the Transit Connect was being built at their plant in Turkey, it was later moved to Spain. But when they import the Transit Connects to the U.S., they brought them all in as passenger vans. So they had full windows all around, seats, second and third row seats. And only once they arrived in the U.S. and had cleared customs, then they would convert them back to cargo vans, for the ones they were going to sell as cargo vans. So they took out the doors that had windows in them. They took out the rear windows, installed steel panels in there, took out the seats, gutted most of the back of the interior to sell those as cargo vans. And they took those extra components and basically just threw them away.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Okay. There you go. Things you never knew.
The more you know.
The more you know. A little rainbow
ding,
and a star
ding,
over
ding,
my head.
Ding.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Huh. Okay.
Your turn, Nicole.
Okay. So, guys, I tried to build pricing. I can't figure out exactly how much the price on this one is. So we're going to get the listed price on the website because I can't build this whole thing together. So what I had was the 2022 Honda Civic Sport, the hatchback. It has a 2-liter four-cylinder, 158 horsepower, 138 pound-feet of torque, and a CVT. You can get it with a turbocharged 1.5 liter that takes you up to 180 horsepower and 177 pound feet if you so choose the sportier sportiness of that particular engine. Even without that one, it's still a fun little thing to drive. It's not like you're driving a great big SUV. It's a pretty compact vehicle. It's comfy. I like driving this. This is a fun car to drive. And I love the interior. They have a pattern on the dashboard where the vents are. That's this honeycomb pattern that goes all the way across. It's just kind of neat. I like that it's this nice sort of nifty interior detail. It makes it look a little bit different instead of all the, you know, the hexagonal everything, you know, just the boring kind of, you know, or you've just got little swoopy lines. It's like, no, we're going to put this honeycomb pattern across our whole dashboard. It's really cool. I like that. Very comfortable, easy to drive. I've taken it back and forth into Boston a couple of times. We'll be taking it down an hour into Boston after this podcast once again. So it is comfortable. Rear seat's pretty good. I mean, you can technically squish three people back there, but I think you're probably only going to want to put two people back there. My teenage daughter sits behind my husband, who is 6 feet tall, and she was fine. But I can imagine if you had three adults across, your shoulder room's going to get a little on the snug side. Five, question mark. Really, we're looking at more like four. It has that hatchback, which is great if cargo is your thing. You know, it's available as a sedan, but really, if you're like, it doesn't make that much of a difference. If you're going to be hauling random cargo, like if you're younger and you think you're going to be hauling your stuff from one apartment to the next or something, or you know, it is so much easier to deal with a hatchback because you can just shove anything in there. You know,
That's why we have one.
Yeah, it is the ultimate, I don't want an SUV, I don't need that much, but I want a little bit of flexibility, then find yourself a hatchback like this, because it makes it so much easier. I love that. I think that's just, it's funny, I'm in so many SUVs, and that when I get just a sedan, and I go to put something in the trunk, it's like, oh, it's just a trunk, I can't just jam this all the way through, it stops, and there's like a roof sort of, hatchbacks are, I love them for people who are sort of moving from one spot to another, from dorms to apartments, from apartments to condos, from condos. If you're moving around a lot, they're a fantastic choice. And the thing with the Civic is it starts at $23,350. The Sport that I was driving is $24,550, which is still a pretty reasonable price, given too that you are getting a Honda. And the reliability ratings on these things are fantastic, and the resale values are fantastic. They're really the kind of car that you decide you are done with a Honda because you're just tired of it. It's fine. It works. Everything is perfectly acceptable. You've just had enough.
And you want to move on to,
you're like, oh, you've done your job for me. Have at it with some other person. But the reliability is insane. You know, you rarely have to get rid of it because you're like, just gave up the ghost. No, you gave up on the Honda. The Honda's fine.
Our older daughter drove her 2008 Fit Sport for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh, okay, we're tired of it. Was that
right? It's fine. It's just it's totally, everything's great. You're just like, I want something else. I've had it long enough.
Let's do something else.
Yeah, I'm ready to move on. I've changed. You've changed. Let's move on. So, So I am a big fan of the Honda Civic. I think this is a great option. It was fully redesigned this year. In fact, it was just named the 2022 North American Car of the Year. That's kind of a big deal. So it was, you know, all new and very, very well received.
Dun, dun, dun.
Just to clarify, the 1.5 liter turbo is, if you want that in a Sport, you have to get the Sport Touring, which is
you have to move up a trim level to the Sport Touring. It's not technically on the Sport. Sorry if that wasn't clear. Yes.
Yeah, because they've got on the hatchback, they've got four trim levels: the LX, Sport, EXL, and the Sport Touring. And the Sport Touring starts at $29,850,
right,
not including delivery. So,
which is, by the way, $1,015.
Yeah, and so that's what I drove a couple of weeks ago, was the Sport Touring, and the Sport's got the older naturally aspirated 2 liter turbo, or 2 liter four cylinder, not a turbo.
I like your naturally aspirated turbo. Really, that was a trick there. Huh? Yeah.
The turbo is naturally aspirated.
But yeah, if you do want to go with the more power from your engine, you do have to jump up, what is it, about $5,000 in price. So if you want to do that, it's $5,000. But you're getting more, obviously, than just the engine, because you're getting something that's, it's literally two trims higher in the lineup. But that is out there. But I don't, the thing is, I don't feel like this, the engine, the powertrain in the Sport is just fine. It doesn't feel lacking. You don't feel like it doesn't accelerate enough. You don't feel like you're, you know, under pressure to merge into heavy highway traffic. So yeah, you're going to get more if you move up the lineup. And yes, the interior is going to get nicer. You get fancier features, but you really don't feel driving the Sport like you're suffering driving a base model by any means.
And if you get the hatchback Sport, you can get a manual transmission.
Yeah.
And so that you can just wring the power right out as much as you want. That's where that's
exactly.
That's the money move.
Yeah.
Where you save money.
Yes, you save the monies.
Well, I don't think you actually. I think they don't. You don't save any money because I think they charge the same price now for both.
Oh no! Versus the turbo. Is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like have fun. Yeah, have your fun by putting the manual transmission in the Sport versus paying $5,000 to have your turbo in the Sport Touring.
And, and Honda does great manual transmissions.
Yeah,
they
are very slick shifting. They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I agree. I really like. You know, aside from the styling being a little more sedate, you know, as we talked about last time, being more sedate than the previous generation. You know, everything else about it is fantastic. You know, there's plenty of room for adults in the back seat, you know, in terms of headroom and legroom. As you said, you know, it's obviously not as wide as, mm-hmm. you know, some bigger cars. But two adults can easily sit very comfortably in the back seat. And one of the things I like about the Civic hatchback that they initially did on the previous generation model, and they've carried over to this one. You know, on most hatchbacks, you have, you know, that cargo cover that, you know, if you're carrying larger objects, you know, it usually hooks onto the underside of the hatch and, you know, behind the back seats. And if you want to put larger stuff in there, you've got to unhook that. You got to figure out somewhere to stash that.
Tall, crooked. You hope you don't mess it up because you like shove something on top of it by accident. Cable.
You get the little cord that latches it hooked on something and rip it and you try to pick it back up later
on the Civic, it's actually got just a retracting cover that slides over to the left side, so you can pull it out. Kind of like blinds, you know, just pull it across, hook it on the right-hand side. When you're not using it, you can just unhook it and it slides back in. It's out of the way. Very, very easy to use. You know, no hassle. It's a really cool little feature that I've really liked on our Civic.
Cool.
Yeah. It's little things like that make a car much more usable and much easier in daily life. It really is the little things that matter.
It is. Yeah. I had three Hondas. I had the Civic. A 90 Honda Civic that I drove for 15 years, and I sold it to a friend because he was his life was not going well, and I thought I'd be a nice person to sell him an inexpensive my car. I had a Del Sol, which someone pulled out in front of, and I ran into him. And then we had my wife had a CRV. We had moved back to San Francisco, and we had a CRV and a WRX, and we had to sell one of them because we didn't need two cars because we mostly just took the bus everywhere, and so we sold the CRV. Which somebody owned until they got into an accident with it. So they'll just keep going until you slam them into something.
We've had two Civic hybrids. We had a CRV back in the day, and we had an Element.
And of course the Integra, which is technically a Honda.
Which is technically a Honda, yeah. But the Element is the one that I'm like, I miss that one.
My brother owns an Element. He brought it new. He keeps in immaculate shape, and I tell him he is not allowed to sell it before I get rights of first refusal.
First right of refusal comes to you.
Yeah, I'm his older brother, so this is what you – yeah, these are the rules.
This is how life works.
he had a radiator cap issue the other day, and I'm like, well, if you just don't want the car, you know, I'll come pick it up.
I'll take it off your hands. I'll take it for you.
He's I'm good. It's fine.
How old is that then? How long has he had that?
I don't know.
It's been a while since they stopped.
It has been a while. 2008 or so that they stopped building those.
So he probably got it like 2006 or 7, maybe 2005. The neighbors across the street have one, so I'm always on the lookout to see if they're going to put a for sale sign on it. They use it all the time. Oh. They have like a Mercedes.
2011 was the final year of production, so... Yeah, it's at the very least 11 years old. Probably, like you said, older than that. He got a couple years earlier.
Yeah, there was one for sale when I first moved out here to the suburbs for $4,500, but it was in, it was in rough shape. And now that car, that person could probably sell for $7,000. The used car prices, I could sell my BRZ right now for what I paid for it.
I just looked up my mom's old Kia Rio.
More than what I paid for it, actually.
She has a 16 Rio. Kia Rio base, like, it has crank windows, for crying out loud. And on the LARP, we looked it up. Crank, you're going to crank the window, right? So you have to crank the windows. It has not a, if there was a feature you could exclude, she excluded it. And the thing, I got a Carvana, I clicked just for kicks. Went on Carvana, thing has, I think, about 40,000 miles on it. $16,000.
What? Yeah.
$16,000 for a Kia Rio from 2016 that has crank windows.
I just saw something yesterday that average transaction prices on used cars is now up to $30,000.
It's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I could probably sell my BRZ for $21,000. Mm-hmm. 2017, it's only... 2014, it's only got 41,000 miles on it. So it doesn't have a lot of miles. It's it's the fun car. You go out and drive it for fun.
If you have like a halfway decent car and you don't need it, you're like, I wonder if I should sell it. Sell it.
But I could sell it and then turn around and try to buy a new BRZ, which starts at like $30,000.
Or just if you don't need a car, like if you have that extra car, like you're like, do we really need two cars? If you don't really need to, now's the time to make the second one go away and just stick the money in the bank or something. And then eventually in a year or 2 years or whatever, if you need a second car, you can buy one when prices get more normal.
I got the Jag still.
Gets more normal. Yeah.
I still got the Jag. I was driving that around yesterday. It has the best stereo system of the cars we own.
So you're keeping your car based on the stereo system. I'm sorry, this car is falling apart, but the stereo, honey.
It's all-wheel drive, and the dogs fit in the back. It's a sedan. They like the back. It's nice and comfortable, and it's got a CD player.
CD player. Woo-hoo-hoo. Yeah.
This was a story in Motor Trend that I saw the other day from CarGurus data. At the end of December 2020, average price of used cars was $22,837. By December 2021, it was $30,620.
I looked it up, and now like the next like few weeks, I'm just going to be thinking about whether or not I should sell my BRZ and then wait a year and then buy a new BRZ. Because I always want to buy like second year model, and hopefully the prices will go back. There won't be that $15,000 markup like I found the other day at the Subaru dealership here in the Bay Area.
$15,000 on a BRZ?
$15,000 on a BRZ.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I put it on Twitter. They don't care. Like people who've dealt with that dealership, like, oh yeah, they do that all the time.
And they're only going to do it. Like we talked about this, I think, last week. They're only going to do it if somebody pays for it. Like they didn't think they could sell it, they wouldn't do it. They're like, somebody's going to do it.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, they had three in stock.
Supply.
They had three in stock, and all the other dealerships around had nothing.
So there you go. So
that's why they're the only ones left.
Yeah, everyone else bought them, and now they're like, well, just, you know, no one else has them. Kick up the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
All right. Well, since we were talking about the Civic and North American Car of the Year, why don't we start with you, Nicole, our resident member of the NACTOID jury.
That's me.
And talk about the vehicles that won the North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year awards.
Yeah, so we announced them last Tuesday in Detroit, and the 2022 Honda Civic was the Car of the Year. The Ford Maverick won for Truck of the Year, and the Ford Bronco won for Utility Vehicle of the Year. So Ford walked away with two wins, which is pretty cool for them. They were pretty excited. And I have to say thank you to Sam, because I had to pronounce the name of the executive that won this, and we don't know until we read the card. I'm like, oh, God, how do I say his name? Golhatra. I only need to say it because Sam figured it out. He's like, Golhatra, say it many times. So I did.
Kumar Golhatra. He's the president of the Americas for Ford.
Yes, and you can't practice. Like, and I'm like, all the names for anybody, because there's three different potential, because you've got three finalists, and until you open up that little card, you don't know who won. So those were our three winners. So Ford walks away with two very happily, and Honda walks away with one. And I you know, the numbers were out there for how much, where the jurors voted, like how many, not individually, but the totals for each vehicle. And the vehicles that won handily, it wasn't like it was even close. They really won. A lot of people were questioning, and, you know, I don't know the answer to this. It's not like I have some secret insider information as to why the EVs that were eligible didn't win. But, you know, it's not like people were thinking, oh, you snubbed EVs. I'm like, well, nope, we technically, quote, snub two vehicles in every category every year because only one can win. It has to be one. So you can't win them all no matter how good all the vehicles that are up are for each category. And I just think I'm pretty pleased with the results. I don't look at it and think like, oh, these are terrible. I'm sure somebody does. I'm sure some people are thinking they were horrible, awful, bad choices. But isn't that how words works? It's like you're quarterbacking from the living room on a Sunday, that you could have done it better than everybody else. But I think that they were good choices. I was pleased with them. Also, in case you're wondering, that trophy has to weigh at least 500 pounds. So if you ever win this award or you have to pick it up, man, it is.
Do some training in advance.
It really is. I'm like, you know how like Clue.
It is melted down the cert block.
I know, right? To melt it down, cert block engine. We just make it in the shape of a car. It's like you feel like it's like from Clue, like, you know, Colonel Mustard in the library with a candlestick. It's like Nicole Wakelin on the stage with an Actoid trophy. Whack! Like you could kill a man with this thing. It's huge.
It's a beautiful trophy, though. It's designed by Welmer gorgeous. A few years ago.
Yeah, wow. It's an absolutely beautiful trophy. It really, really is. It really is lovely. So yeah, so three worthy vehicles won. They were all vehicles that I personally was impressed with and was not surprised to see the winners. You know, you never, like I said, you never really know until they win, but I was not surprised with the winners. What did you guys think?
Just a question, because I'm in the World Car of the Year, so I'm wondering, do you guys have to drive the car in order to vote for it? Because we're not allowed to. Okay, I'm just curious. Because the EVs, I think, it was tougher to get into a Rivian, and it's tougher to get into the Ioniq 5 than it is a Bronco. Well, you
know what, and Rivian, for people who were asking that question, Rivian actually brought a car to...
To the thing.
So we drive in, we have a day in Detroit where we drive, in Michigan, where we drive all the vehicles. It's like a 2-day drive, and Rivian had two vehicles there. Lucid was trying to get a vehicle and didn't, but they really made an effort to get all of us some seat time in that car. They had a program that they ran last minute, literally for jurors. Like if you want some time, they reached out to people who live in Detroit. I live, an hour north of Boston, and they said, Nicole, if you're free this day, we'll fly to New York so you can spend the day driving. Can we do this? So I got some time in it.
Cool.
So they really made an effort to make sure that,
as many.
And I guess that could have affected, because I don't know that every juror, and like Canadian jurors didn't get in a lot of things this year just because of the nature of COVID and who can cross the border. But I give Lucid a lot of credit for making the effort to at least give us the opportunity to get some time, because, yeah, we're not going to vote for a car that all I've done has been like, well, it looks good on paper. Like that's, no. Yeah.
I heard from a couple of other jurors that, especially for the Canadian jurors, most of them had not driven either the Rivian or the Lucid. And so that definitely hurt them, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. And there was just, that was just one of those, you know, unfortunately, the nature of the world that we're in at the moment, there was no way to overcome that. I even heard about, you know, there were efforts to try to get things across the border from various OEMs and to make things happen. And it was, you know, unfortunately a challenge that I guess they couldn't overcome. Could that have affected why those vehicles didn't win? Sure, but who knows? I don't know. You know, I don't know if
well, they're still mentioned in the thing. And also, just because it's North America Truck of the Year, Car of the Year, doesn't mean you have to buy it. It's not like that's right. The only car.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like now everybody else, forget it. These are the only three vehicles which you can buy. We're just saying.
Just being nominated is a huge honor.
Yeah.
And it sounds so silly, but it is. When you look at the number of vehicles that are eligible to get into the top three, that's something. I mean, it's 50 jurors. It's a lot of vehicles to choose from. So getting into the top three, you're still at saying that, you know, and considering that, think about it for a second, Lucid is a brand new company. They have one vehicle out there. It's not even very much of it out there as of this writing. And yet still they were one of the top three vehicles. Yeah. So it's not like NACTO is like, bah, these EVs. This is a flash in the pan. We're not considering this. Like, no, they
same with Rivian. Yeah. I mean, yes. Rivian's a brand new company. Exactly. And the fact that they're like both of those are brand new companies that they're above these established automakers who have, you know, trucks out there and sedans out there, and then you have these two brand companies, really. They're but just like, they just started building cars. Like,
it's like it's not like it's like if there were classes in a race. It's like, no, we're not going to put you against the new kids, Rivian. We're going to put you against Ford. Have fun with that. Like, you know, it's like it's not like small competition. You have some to get up there. Yeah. You're with a company that it's been around and builds the kind of quality products that a company that has been around for that long builds. That is saying something for both Rivian and for Lucid.
And for Lucid, yeah.
And, you know, to be fair, you know, this was the first time that there have been EVs as finalists in all three categories. You know, so there was the potential that you could have three EVs winning this year.
Yes.
It didn't happen, but, it was possible.
Right.
I'm curious, you know, for you, you said you agreed with the choices in each one. Are these the ones that you gave most of your votes to? Because I think if I understand correctly, you know, for the finals, you get to cast 10 votes and split them among the three however you want. Is that correct?
Yeah, you get to, you're given 10 points. Now you're putting me in the spot, and suddenly that doesn't seem right. But 10 points, you're allowed. Suddenly I'm like, wait, how many points? You're allowed to disperse those points. I have more than one jury that I'm voting for, and I'm like, wait, NACTOY's 10, right? You are allowed to disperse those however you want in the final vote. If you want to give, if you want to completely exclude one of those vehicles, for example, because you didn't drive it, you can do that. If you want to just, even if you drove all three in a given category and you want to give all the points, you know, this is your favorite, you can choose to distribute those points however you want. And I think everybody kind of does that. It is hard to look at that category and say, like, because I drove everything. So I had my choice of all three in every one of those categories. And to say one was so good that the other deserved nothing, I couldn't do. Like, I gave some points to each vehicle. I allocated more to some than to others, but there was not a single vehicle on there that didn't get some points. I just looked in each category and said, who do I think deserves who deserves the most who impressed me for whatever reasons, for the quality, the innovation, the design, you know, who had the right, was new for the market and had something different or unique or elevated the segment and still manages to be a value for what it is offering to consumers. There's a lot to consider. So, but yeah, you can spread out those points however you want to among each of the three categories.
I wonder if it had been different if the Ioniq 5 had been a car, because, you know, Hyundai is like, it's an SUV. And you look at it, you're like, it's a car. Fine.
I know. Well, it's so hard with all those. You're like, what, you know, is there a definitive answer for what's an SUV and a car anymore? There's
it's
not.
It's just marketing. What they marketed as a car. They could have just said, hey, look at the new Ioniq 5 hatchback. But then they knew that people are like, oh, well, I don't know. I don't want a hatchback. I want an SUV.
Exactly. See, because the SUV segment is more popular. So you want to release a brand new EV as a car? You want to release a brand new EV as an SUV, then you're probably going to say SUV because more people are going to consider it in the first place. And it's solid. I mean, I loved that car.
I really love that car.
I think the Ioniq's a really good, it's a good vehicle. I truly liked it. So there was nothing, honestly, there was in any category, there was no vehicle that I personally looked at and said, I have no idea how this got here. It doesn't belong here. This is ridiculous. Like every single one had a reason to be there. Like there was something to recommend it. You're like, this did this really well. This did that really well. There was a reason for every single vehicle to be in the place that it was in the first place.
There's no ew moments.
Yeah, there were no ooh moments. Nothing that I went, what? Was I on a different page than everybody else? Nope, I got it.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a very strong field this year. I've driven most of the vehicles. I think the Lucid and the GTI are the only ones that I haven't driven at least a little bit. And everything else, really strong. I definitely agreed with the choice of the Maverick over the Lucid. The Rivian. You know, the Rivian's really good, but I think the Maverick, in terms of its
accessibility,
its accessibility and its impact on the market, I think is really important by being a very affordable, very fuel efficient, very, high utility vehicle. Starting at 20 grand for the 40 mile per gallon hybrid.
It was the map, there were other trucks, and the Santa Cruz is very similar. Aside, take out the EV part of things. If you start comparing just to, the Santa Cruz was great. The Rivian was great. They each had reasons to recommend. But, like, the Maverick, really, for that price point, for the fuel economy, for the way they designed that, I love that you can buy that really affordable truck. And you, if you want to, you know, customize the bed to do things, you don't have to spend the cost of the truck all over again to buy official components to do that, to buy official inserts and official accessories. You can, they have things that they're doing 3D printing, so you can 3D print a clip that goes in the back of the, like, center console, and then 3D print what you want on the back of it. You want a couple cup holders on yours? Sure. You want it to be something to hold a tablet? Sure. And they're sharing that stuff with the public so that you can, you know, you can do something like that instead of spending a fortune on all these different parts. Or if you want to make the bed.
Pull some scraps of 2x4 out of the garage.
Exactly. In the bed, take a couple of scraps of 2x4, stick them on there, stick some plywood, stick them on there. You just spent $10 to do what you could have spent easily thousands of dollars to do if you had bought official licensed OEM products that were all shiny and perfect. And if you want to, go for it. They'll sell you that stuff. But if you don't want to, they totally don't have to. I think that's really, that's unique. That's different. I think that deserves recognition.
Truck stuff is like drum gear. Like drum gear, drumming gear is like very expensive. Like, oh, you need a stand for your cymbal. Ah, here's a couple, you know, we need a couple $100 for some metal. It's the same thing with truck stuff. Oh, you want some lights? Like, I don't know, $500. Like, what? Why?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just metal and some LEDs, right?
Exactly.
What makes these? Well, there's some wires too, sir.
Make sure it fits. It's like, well, I can make sure it fits, and it doesn't cost that much, you know.
All right. Well, from talking about the best of 2022, let's transition to some not so great stuff. Yesterday, I was scrolling through my feeds, and I stumbled across yet another great article by Jason Torchinsky on Jalopnik about the past was garbage. And, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, so I'm old enough to remember this stuff. I remember when the Chrysler K car first came out, and, you know, at the time, you know, in 1978, you know, it was the car that saved Chrysler from bankruptcy. You know, because they were on the verge of going out of business, and, you know, they got some government guaranteed loans, which they paid back a couple of years later, and that gave them enough to launch this thing. And this product, the K car, you know, a compact front wheel drive car, became the basis of everything that Chrysler built for the next decade, except for their big trucks and vans. Everything that wasn't a big truck and van was based off the K car. And so they had so many different variations. And, you know, one of those, you know, they did slightly longer wheelbase versions. They did one of the big things in that era was this idea of, you know, if you put a more squared off notched, you know, roof line on a sedan with a more vertical rear window as opposed to a forward sloping window, it made it look more luxurious, more
classic.
But of course, you know, today, you know, if they did that, you know, the manufacturers, you know, they've figured out how to do the tooling, you know, for body stampings and that, you know, more affordably than they did in those days. And, you know, so they would just have a different set of stampings. I mean, you know, today you look, for example, you know, at a Ford Escape and a Lincoln Corsair, they're the same car underneath. But, you know, they have completely different sheet metal. Not in 1984, you know, especially at Chrysler in 1984. And so this, I thought this was really cool. Jason went through and figured out how they did some of these formal roof lines on these cars, you know, to convert a Chrysler E-Class sedan into a Chrysler New Yorker. What do you guys think about this?
Oh my God, I can't. When I first saw this picture, I'm like, "What? Somebody did that?" And it's like, "No, it was this way." I'm like,
"It looks
wait, an automaker did that."
It looks like something somebody was at home. You're like, "You know what? I'm gonna make this fiberglass thing and add it to my car." It's like you're fabricating things at home.
Caulking in there around it to seal it up.
It's so bad. Just gonna. You have to. You have to put the picture up so people can see, or the link to it somewhere in the show so that people can see what we're talking about. But it literally looks like one of those, like, well, I'm not paying, like you're talking about, Robbie. I'm not paying someone to fix this. I can fix this. You're
I
like,
can fix
wait,
this
that's
myself.
That's how it came. Yeah, that's how it came. It came that way. Oh, okay then.
It's like someone wanted to build a Lemons car and they're like, you know what? Let's mess this up.
It's bad.
It was a Lemons car from the factory.
Yes, a Lemons car from
it was pre-lemoned for you.
Yeah.
But I think this sort of, it's fun because it's not, I don't know if it's fun. It's not fun for your pocketbook, but there was a handful of good cars in the 80s and 90s just because manufacturing was, it was tough to manufacture. There was, you know, U.S. automakers were having difficulty competing with Japanese automakers. But in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of really bad cars that were out in the road. Just bad. They just weren't very good. And now you see them, I see them, you know, people are bringing them to Radwood and be like, oh, man, I really love that car. I'm like, no, you didn't. You never drove that car because those cars were horrible. And I was talking to you guys earlier about it, the Ford Escort. Oh, everyone God. I knew who had a Ford Escort had nothing but problems with those cars. The late 80s, early 90s Ford Escorts were just piles of trash.
And so my husband had one when he went to college. He shared it with his brother. He had to drive back and forth from New Hampshire to Virginia Tech, which is in Western Virginia. And every single time I'd be like, go with God, please don't die. Because we were dating when I was in college. We were in college. Something went wrong every time. I'd be like, so what went wrong this time? I remember a story where the brakes just said, we're done. We choose no longer to brake. And because it was the middle of the night and he was a stupid college kid, he continued to drive home and he would just slow down with the emergency brake at the at the little toll booths and like throw money in and then ease up and keep going. That's how he arrived home. And the thing is, that wasn't shocking. I remember thinking,
that makes sense.
So that was this Thanksgiving's adventure getting back. It was always something wrong with that thing. Always.
A friend of mine and I he had a like an 86, 87 Ford Escort, and I had my 2000 Roadster, my Datsun 2000 Roadster, 1969, and we would go down to a junkyard down in the desert to go, like, you know, scavenging for parts and things. That's the thing you did instead of getting on the internet in the late 80s, early 90s, is you and your friend.
You had to go find it yourself.
Yeah, to go find it. You just wander around. You have some tools in your back pocket looking for parts. We would never take his car. His car was almost, it was like, you know, 18 years newer than my car. We would always take the Roadster. Because we're just like, I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, you see it a lot of, like, yeah, whenever I see, like, oh, look at that. I'm like, no, that wasn't a good car in the 80s or 90s. I don't think why it's not going to be a good car now, because now it's got, you know, yeah.
There's so many times I see someone looking at cars, especially from that era, and they waxing poetic about this amazing find. I'm like, you guys, I'm sorry. No, like, just stop. I'm supposed to jump on the I'm an auto journalist bandwagon and say, yes, look at this amazing thing. And I'm like, I feel like, you know, Princess Leia on the Millennium Falcon. What a hunk of junk. Like, why would you buy this? No, don't do it.
I think if you buy one of those old cars and you put an EV powertrain in it, as long as you're fine with, like, just horrible suspension, it should be okay.
Okay, I'm okay with that craziness.
They had bad suspension, but they also, in those years, in those days, they still had a very healthy tendency to rust, or unhealthy tendency.
Oh,
to rust.
A
friend of mine, I was looking to buy a used car. You know, this was somewhere around, I don't know, 83, 84, 85. I was looking to buy a used car, and a friend of mine, his dad was selling, like, a 76 Ford Granada. And so I went to take it for a test drive. And, you know, for those of you that are young, you know, and, you know, think that, you know, changing the high beams should either be automatic or just, you know, something you tap the stock on the steering column with. Back in those days, to go from low beam to high beam on the cars, there was actually a switch on the floor that you tapped with your foot. And so I went to tap the high beam switch on this thing, and it went right through the floor.
Oh my God.
It was so rusted away. It just, the switch just plop. Like, okay, I think I'll take a pass on this car.
I miss the foot powered high beam switch. It was just a little silver metal thing you just stepped on.
Yeah.
Was it because they rusted? Was that why they stopped doing that? I don't know the official why, because it was such an easy thing to just move your foot over.
I feel like the failure rate was probably higher than just using your hand.
It was actually the rusted, not the switch.
Well, but the switch.
Because you get mud.
Don't rust like they used to.
Yeah, but you got your feet are muddy and wet and gross. I'm sure the failure rate, they realized the failure rate of that was much higher than just putting a little thing on the stock, which is not full of.
It was so much easier when you could. I'm in cars where I'm like, I suppose your own car you get familiar with, but I'm in all these different cars. Like, oops, sorry, high beams. Was just trying to wash my windshield. Sorry about that.
I do that all the time in Mercedes. I'm like, oh, sorry. Because the right stock is actually the gear shifter.
Yeah, I do it backwards every time.
Sorry. Apologies.
All right. Next up, Bollinger, who, you know, we were talking about Rivian earlier. Bollinger is a company that popped up, 4 or 5 years ago with, you know, this very boxy looking, electric pickup truck and SUV that a lot of people got really excited about and thought, yeah, this was cool. And because one of the cool things was you could open up the hood and then there were panels, you know, at the center console that basically gave you a complete pass through all the way down the center console of the truck. So you could put an item that went from the front bumper all the way to the rear bumper, and things like that got a lot of people interested in this thing. Unfortunately, among those people that were interested in this thing, apparently none of them were investors. Because since
No one with money, but lots of people.
No one with money, but that's a small issue to overcome.
Since they were first shown, they were apparently, as near as I can tell, those first two that were shown back in 2017 or so are still the only two that exist.
Really?
I mean, I've been to a lot of car shows over the last several years.
It's the same ones.
You know, there's one pickup, one SUV that they just keep trotting out. At least unlike the early 80s when Jerry Weigert and Vector, you know, only had one example of the Vector sports car that he just kept repainting and bringing it to different magazines and saying, oh, yeah, I got a new prototype. You know, this time they didn't even bother repainting.
They didn't even try. They're like, same car, different day.
Yeah. And so anyway, they've made it official. They are pivoting. They've canceled plans indefinitely to build the pickup and the SUV. And they're returning any deposits they got from customers, and they're focusing on just doing a electric skateboard chassis for commercial trucks. If you were waiting on a Bollinger B1 or B2, sorry.
Time to rethink your options.
It was because of Bollinger when the Rivian came out. I just like walked by the thing and I made someone else cover it.
Yeah,
you made someone else cover the Rivian.
Yeah, because I was like, whatever. This is just like Bollinger, because it just felt like this is never going to happen. Bollinger's never going to. It was just, you know, they look cool. They look like something the A-Team would build in the garage during a montage. The pass through was cool, but at the same time, we're just like, is this really? And you're also, you know, when you're making an EV, you want some sort of aerodynamics, and this is not. This is the opposite of that.
This was literally, you know, a big block of steel.
Yeah, and it made the Honda Element look like a Lotus. It was just a
sleek.
I mean, I commend them for trying. Building one car is super hard. Building 100 is impossible. Building them at scale, I don't even know how that happens. Yeah. So, they put up the fight for a few years, and I don't know how many people are going to buy a. And I think this goes back to if you're either a young company or a small company or you're a big company, you can either buy your commercial vehicles from an established player, which has service centers all around the United States, or you can buy them from a startup and just hope for the best. And
cross your fingers.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, especially after Tesla showed the Cybertruck, I think a lot of the interest in the Bollinger kind of probably evaporated. Because, you know, a lot of the same things about the Bollinger that appealed to people, I think, were there in the Cybertruck.
Yeah.
And, you know, people thought, well, there's a lot better chance of Tesla building the Cybertruck.
Than Bollinger.
May or may not ever happen.
I don't know if that's still a good bet or not, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was certainly what people were thinking, I think, when they first showed it off.
I think the Cybertruck's still going to be out here, even if it's just for spite. Even if I think Eli
for spite.
They're making money. You know, they have they're profitable, but you know, you have to like look at what's going on. It's like Ford. Ford did, you know, the problem is that Tesla is the last place where transparency happens. Ford is like, hey, we're not going to build these other things because we're building so many, you know, of this other thing, Lightnings, Mavericks, whatever, or Mustang Mach-Es. Tesla is probably in the same boat where they're like, you know what, we're making money off all these Model 3s. We still have to finish that factory in Texas. Let's really just keep making the thing that makes us money and sort of focus a little bit later on our space age 70s retro futuristic truck.
Yeah. All right. One last one, going back to Honda, the Civic Type R, which is the last variant of the new Civic that we still hasn't been officially revealed, is shown the other day at the Tokyo Auto Salon, at least still with a camo wrap on it. So we haven't seen all the details of it, but there's a new Type R coming later this year, and still has a big wing on the back and wider fenders. What do you guys think of it?
It looks very fancy pants in its little, actually, I'm loving the camo. The camo is actually little cars. Did you look at it?
Yeah.
It's a series. It's the cutest camo pattern ever.
It's R. It's the letter R and then little white, red R's and then little white outlines
little
of cars.
It's adorable.
Well, yeah, it's actually the white outlines are Type R's.
Yeah.
So really you see the Type R profile, you know, next. Superimposed on the red R's on a black
background. On all the
background.
Red R's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks great. I think it looks great. I love the crazy, the crazy fit on the back.
I think they went. I like the last generation Type R because they're just ridiculous. It was all sharp and stabby. But I think that at the same time, people were. I remember when I got it in, I was driving my wife around, and she's like, "I really like this car." Except for that stupid, and then she said, like, a bad word, wing on the back. It was just, like, too much. She's like, it's too much. There's too much going on. And I think there's a lot of people who are just like, there's too much going on. You get the 18 to 24-year-old who was like, yeah. But then once you leave that demographic, everyone else is like, eh.
Too much wing.
I actually once did see a Type R here in Michigan that had the wing removed.
Really?
Yeah, so it just had a standard Civic hatchback on it. It had no wing. And they actually did offer it. They have offered it in Europe. They offered a version of it in Europe without the wing. But for some reason, they never offered it here as a
I wonder which
option.
Sold more, the winged version or the not winged version?
I would guess probably the winged version.
Just you so think? You can show off. Yeah. It's a flex.
Look at my fancy car.
But
oh, it is a flex.
I would have loved to had the option to get a de-winged Type R.
De-winged.
Yeah.
on the plus side, you know, at least, you know, having that wing up there as high as it was up in the air meant that when you were inside the car, when you looked back through the rearview mirror, the contour of the wing actually matched the contour of the top of the rear glass. So when you look in the rearview mirror, you don't actually see the wing. It just looks straight back underneath the wing. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't obstruct your view at all, which is, you know, that part was good. It was just, you just got to kind of keep your eyes closed until you get up and get in the car. Once you're in the car, it's fine.
Just don't look until you sit down.
Yeah. I think they'll probably do better with this one. I think it's a little less wacky.
It's a little rounder. It's not, what did you say earlier? It's not as stabby.
It's not a stabby. It's not going to take you in a back alley and steal your money. It's not a chivy.
Okay. We have a couple of listener questions today. The first one is from Big Daddy Henshaw, who asks, hey, guys, hope you're doing well this week. I live up here in Canada where it is minus 31 degrees this week. With the wind, it feels like minus 40. And so he's talking in Celsius rather than freedom units. no idea what that is in imperial measurement. Have batteries in EVs improved enough that range loss is a non-issue now?
Does he mean in the cold?
Yeah.
I think so.
No.
I mean, the reality is it doesn't. It actually doesn't matter if you're driving a battery electric vehicle or an internal combustion vehicle. You are going to lose efficiency in cold weather. you know, you've got, there's more rolling resistance on snow and ice. You know, the tires get harder. You're overall less efficient. The fuel, you know, for gas vehicles, the fuel mixtures that they use, the fuel blends that they use are actually different at different times of the year. Because if you use summer fuel in the wintertime, it's designed to evaporate less. And when it's really cold, you're going to have a harder time starting the car. So, Michael, you know, the winter fuel blends are less efficient than summer fuel blends. So, you know, and plus you've got things like having to run your heat. You know, at least with an internal combustion engine, you've got waste heat coming off the engine that you can use. With battery electric vehicles, you've got to use some juice from the battery to heat the car. It's better than it used to be. And, you know, a lot of new EVs are now coming with heat pumps, which are much more efficient than the resistance heaters that have typically been used in the past. So you are going to lose range, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And we had a response to this one on Twitter from Bryn Barenhausen and another listener who does own a Tesla Model 3. Says, knowing how your car does in snow is part of responsible car ownership, in my opinion. And he's right there. So I took Jules, which is the name for his Model 3, out today to find out. The traction control is phenomenal. Regen braking is a huge plus. She may be rear-wheel drive with stock Michelin MXM4 tires, but she felt planted and in control. And, you know, those are things that all that stuff is actually irrespective of what kind of powertrain you have. You know, if you get good tires, you know, you're going to have decent traction. But, you know, rain, you are going to take a hit on range in cold weather. That's just the reality. Just as your fuel economy with a gas car goes way down in cold weather. What's your experience been like, Nicole?
I can even on Russ's, he has that plug-in hybrid Jeep in the driveway right now, and he can see how it doesn't get the same range that it would get. It's not like suddenly he, you know, has dropped to nothing. But, yeah, it does affect how it performs in cold weather. I think the interesting thing is, you know, does it lose so little range that it's a non-issue? Kind of. I mean, you don't really think about in your ICE, you know, your vehicle is just powered by gas, like, oh, normally I go 450 miles and today I'm only going to go 448 miles because it's cold weather. I don't think for the most part in most, you know, the difference, everybody knows you're going to get a little less range in an EV or something with a battery, you know, the batteries during cold weather, I think everybody sort of plans for that. I don't think it's a significant enough drop for most people day to day that it's something to panic over or something that makes people think, oh, I can't do this because I lose too much range in the cold. You lose a little, but I don't think it's enough to warrant panic or really changing your purchase decision, I guess.
Yeah, there's actually a pretty good article from Tim Stevens over at Roadshow from the 7th where he drove the Taycan. And he beat the EPA range even in the winter. And there's pictures of him driving in the snow and stuff. And so it's getting better. It's getting much better. And also it's Porsche. So, you know, you're paying a lot of money for Porsche. So, you know, you're expecting some. But the Taycan keeps.
But the basic physics are the same.
Yeah, the basic physics are the same. So, you know, the cars are getting, the EVs are getting better. Everything, you know, it's just going to get better. And again, like Nicole said, I mean, your daily day, your day to day, you're like, oh, no, I was going to drive. It's negative 60. I'm going to go drive my Nissan Leaf 250 miles a day. But it's only going to get 240 miles of range. Oh no! Exactly. You're like,
right?
Yeah.
I think the big thing is, you know, most modern EVs now, you know, have long enough nominal range that for the vast majority of people, even driving in extremely cold weather, the range you're going to lose, you're still going to have plenty of extra. I mean, most people don't drive to 300 miles a day. So if you've got 250 miles of range in normal weather, you know, even if that drops to 160, 170 in 30 below zero, you know, you're still, you know, for almost everybody, that's going to be more than enough. You know, most people are not driving that much.
And you know what, I'm trying to think of the number of pure EVs that I've driven long enough on a long enough trip to or played with this enough. You know, you can say I'm going from here to Albuquerque and it will plot out where you need to stop and when based on how you're driving and the distance, how, you know, the how much of a range you're getting on your battery. So if the weather is exceptionally cold and you are driving ridiculous amounts of miles because you're on a road trip, I would assume those would all adjust and be like, nope, we're going to stop you. here, in this city. Yeah. It's a little closer than instead of that city that we would stop you at if it was the middle of August. So you still have the tools readily at your disposal to show you, you know, okay, I got to stop here instead of there if I'm on a huge road trip and it's cold and my range isn't quite what it would normally be.
Yeah.
All right. Last one is from Wes and asks, is the era of the muscle car over, or have electric vehicles opened up a new era to push the game, push the genre further? Kind of sad watching a Tesla race an ICE vehicle at the track. A lot of the charm is missing.
I think the era of the muscle car will evolve into something. I think it's there are people who have been building these sort of these quarter mile monsters that are like these retro mods, and they're just like tweaking them and doing all these like batteries and like, well, take these batteries out, let's put this controller in, let's put this, you know. It's. I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're a car nerd, you're still a nerd. You're still like thinking about mixtures, and you're still thinking about like bore and displacement. And there's a lot of. I mean, I think the idea they're like, well, I work on cars, so I'm not a nerd. No, you're kind of a nerd. Like some of the nerdiest things I ever had to do was just trying to match up dual carbs. Oh my God! Just like trying to figure out the mixture. Like,
piece of garden hose and a screwdriver.
Yeah, it's you know, it's
listen for the sound as you adjust the jets.
Yeah,
and balance them.
And also, I think there's you know, you could still have your muscle car and just, you know, it's not you can't. At some point, you got to realize, okay, my car's not going to be the fastest one on the track. You could still have a nice, loud, annoying, or beautiful, or whatever you want to do with it, muscle car, and not worry about it being like destroyed by by the Tesla Plaid or the Taycan or, you know, whatever is coming out. I mean, trucks are faster than muscle cars, like big giant Ford Raptors. I remember 13-second quarter miles were a big deal back in the day. If you could do it, you're like, whoa. Now every car does that. Every car on probably.
Well, I mean, when Stellantis did their EV day last June or July, whenever it was, you know, when Tim Kuniskis got up and talked about Dodge, you know, Dodge for the last, you know, half decade, Dodge has been a muscle car brand. You know, it's FCA and now Stellantis's American muscle brand. And now it's going to, you know, they dropped the tagline, American e-muscle. They're going electric, but it's still going to be muscle cars. The only thing that's gone is the noise. You know, you lose the noise. Which, you know, I like the noise of a big engine, but, you know, it's not the end of the world.
I think they'll still, you know, it just changes. It might change the what's underneath the hood or not underneath the hood, whatever, but it might change how the car works. But that doesn't mean that you still can't, like, even a muscle car brand like Dodge. So they're not going to build you the Dodge equivalent of a Nissan Leaf. Don't look to them for that. You know, they're going to build you, every car is their equivalent of the Tesla with, you know, the Plaid, crazy, whatever. They're going to lean towards that. They can still do it. Just
it's going to be a Challenger with a big battery. Yeah, and
it's just
big
exactly. It's just going to be a brick. It's going to be the same brick going really fast in a straight line.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, but I think it just changes. It's going to change. I think that the era of, you know, a nice loud engine underneath the thing, give it time. Somebody's going to stick that noise on an EV, and it's going to be how much can you make the noise of your EV mimic the sound of your, you know, a traditional gas-powered engine. You know, there's a million ways you can still do this and still have the fun of playing around with a performance car and getting a performance car, even if it's not powered by gas. I don't think that's going to change the details of it, but the existence of that kind of stuff, not going to change.
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, one of my favorite cars that I've seen in TV shows in a long time, and this is going back to bad cars, but for some reason, is the Grand National. I've always had a soft. I've always loved the Grand National, and in the
Watchmen.
The Watchmen, they had an EV Grand National. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I want this. Because I thought it was probably the coolest looking car when I was a little kid. One of my uncles had one. I think his friend had one. And I was just like, this is amazing. I love this car. I've never driven one because I was a little kid. And then there aren't a lot around. There's probably a reason for that.
there's a surprising number of them, or at least the GNXs, you know, that have, you know, have been garage queens for the last 30 plus years, you know, that have, you know, 20 some miles on them. Actually, another thing I just saw yesterday was somebody had a 2007 Challenger first edition when they first brought out the new Challenger, that had 23 miles on it. They were asking $50,000 for it.
23 miles. Wow.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
It's just go buy a car and then just shove it somewhere. I don't know. I think, feel like cars should be driven, but that's just me.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Samesies. All right. And on that note, let's call it a show, and
right,
we'll talk to you all next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I like how I raised my hand to wave bye. Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.